This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Pete Stoughton is out today. My guest is Nancy Johnston, who has worked in mental health and substance abuse counseling for over four decades. She joins me now to talk about how to apply the process of what she calls disentangling in our lives. She describes entanglement as being lost in another person. Now, we know we can become lost in any number of things, including work, parenting, technology, food, spending. Her book will help you understand loss of self in interpersonal relationships and will teach you skills for disentangling, which can be readily applied to other things as well in your life. Her book is Disentangle When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else. Nancy Johnston, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you, Lynn. Nice to be with you.
So when I read through the title and the cover of your book, I thought entanglement sounds to me a bit like codependency. What are the differences?
Yes, it is in part about codependency. I would say that it has its roots in that. What has happened is that over the years, I have a couple of things, Lynn. Codependence is an important word and concept, but still not really well defined by our profession. We do not have a clearly agreed upon definition of it. It can be pretty broad and can include a number of different behaviors. And so as I've been working with this disentangle concept for about 25 years, and as I started it, I certainly was studying and understanding codependence. And I enriched my picture of understanding codependence simply by seeing that a core dynamic of codependence is loss of self in someone else. That's a really core feature. And I have found that to be a very practical way to look at this concept of, now other language I bring to it is over-functioning for others and under-functioning for self.
So our job when we are over-functioning for others tends to rear its head a lot of times, and because you work in substance abuse, with people who are living with or in a relationship with an addict or an alcoholic. And this is where I think I've heard mostly about things like codependency. Why
exactly?
Why are we more likely, if we are in a relationship, whether it's a family member or, you know, a loved one, a spouse, any kind of relationship, if they have substance abuse challenges?
Why are we more likely to overengage? Is that what you're asking, Lynn?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that one of the things is that it is, there is a very large drama effect, perhaps, when that's going on. The addiction of someone else can bring a great deal of chaos and unpredictability. That would be an important word. Unpredictability and loss of control over the environment. And so often acting in codependent ways is about trying to regain that loss of control. And usually that translates into being controlling someone else.
So let's take this into normal, healthy relationships. The relationship between a parent and a child, for example, tell us when that is an entangled relationship and when it is just a healthy relationship. What are the markers? Because for me personally, anytime I hear about something like entanglement, I think, I always wonder, do I do that with my kids or is it healthy?
Yes. It is a great question and a great area to apply some of this material. How I teach what you're asking about, Lynn, is I think of, I'll try to do this on the radio with no visuals, I think of each person as a circle. And so if we have one circle be a parent and one circle be the child. As when the child is young, those circles overlap a great deal. There's a need for help and nurturing and instruction and guidance. And as the child grows, what happens in and this is in healthy relationships, those circles slowly slide further apart. They share overlap, but the parent has a little more connection with their own self, and the child has an increasing developmental connection with them, their self as well. And so as the child becomes a teenager, I think we want to be aware of both helping that where we intersect, but also helping them to cultivate their own separate self, which may be that we are not answering all the questions for them or thinking through everything. We're inviting them to think through things more completely. And they are making some of their own decisions.
So to take this one step further into a really concrete example that I've seen a lot of parents have difficulty with. So when those two, you know, when the Venn diagram is supposed to be moving, you know, apart instead of overlap between parent
right.
and child, I think in the case of when your child is applying for colleges, for example, and
okay.
it's their job to, you know, write an essay and making sure that they have taken their exams and have, you know, getting the score to what they need it to be to get into the schools that they want to. There becomes such a huge amount of overlap, it seems like, with parents. And they say, I'm doing this because if I didn't, and this kind of gets into helicopter parenting, right?
Right.
My child wouldn't even apply to college. And so you say, well, how do you disentangle that relationship there?
Yeah, it's a great challenge. It's an excellent question. I think that if I was with that teenager, or if I was working, say, with the parent and the teenager, I would step aside from the applications for a bit of time and really ask what they were wanting to do and really make sure that I was hearing from them about what their desires are and what their plans are. Probably we would start hearing about their insecurities, about leaving home, about being on their own. And so some of the, if I'm over attached to the application process, I may not be listening and knowing well enough what's going on with my teen. And so I certainly, as a first step, would encourage that type of in-depth conversation with them, if at all possible, to understand what's going on.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Nancy Johnston. Her book is Disentangle: When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else. So again, this concept of disentangle, which I'm suspecting you're saying is much different than detaching. Detachment is not necessarily fully functional when we just detach from a relationship. There's a way to still engage and yet be disentangled at the same time, is what I think you would
very
tell
much,
me, right?
Yes. Right, very much so. Yes, the disentangling is, you know, and it does build off of the word that you highlighted in the introduction about entanglement. And I think each of us can think about an experience we may have had where we are feeling entangled with someone else. All of a sudden, the conversation doesn't have a flow. It's not going very well. And that's the entanglement. So the disentangling is about noticing when that is happening, noticing ourselves, and finding a pause, a place, a way that we can step back emotionally and sometimes physically, Lynn, from what's going on, and really quiet ourselves so that we think, wait a minute, you know, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What is it I want to communicate? We shift into trying, one of the ways I put it, right in the first, you know, introduction of the book, is we want to shift from being reactive to responsive. And that's a big part of what a lot of the skill sets are. They also get into, we may have find that we have to set boundaries with people, which the book gets into that as well. But this is not about cutting someone off or being cold with them. Those could be manipulative things. This is about really checking in and connecting with our true self and being able to speak and act from that.
Many of us who are in work settings have these relationships with colleagues that can feel dysfunctional and even toxic. And I think a lot of that has to do with how much you entangle in this relationship. And, you know, an example might be that coworker who's sort of mercurial. Sometimes they're really happy and other times they're despondent and down and even angry. And we tend, at least for someone like me, it makes me want to become a pleaser and to find out how to make that person happy and always respond in a more balanced and centered way to the rest of the world.
Yeah,
and that is
right.
That I'm seeing as you're talking, that is entanglement. And so it shouldn't be my personal mission to control someone else.
Well, it makes me want to jump right in and add a dynamic that I'm talking about. And thank you for the rich, rich examples, Lynn. People pleasing would be on the list of what I would call codependent behaviors. Okay, this is how I think about codependency. I think of it in terms of behaviors. So now I let the word codependence drift away and we focus on people pleasing. Your efforts to try to figure that person out are okay up to a point. I put any of these behaviors, whether it's giving, fixing, caregiving, or in this case, people pleasing, I put them, Lynn, on a continuum because I don't want us to think there's anything wrong with those behaviors up to a point. And so if we know that we're focusing on the other person and trying to figure them out, trying to brighten a mood, trying to keep things light and flowing, that's fine up to a point. But if we notice, as you and I are both saying, that an entanglement is budding in us, we feel like saying, what is wrong? You know, how come, you know, I'm trying so hard here, you're not trying. That would be an example of where I would stop and step away and realize, and this is another dynamic we're working with, that I can't control that other person, that I really can't. I can only offer what I can, and then they may or may not be pleased. And us knowing how far to carry ourselves is part of what we're learning.
Right. And yet maintaining enough of a relationship that you're not detaching.
Exactly. Not detaching. Yeah. Nope. You're just adjusting yourself on that continuum. Maybe you just say, well, I do wish you a good day, and you simply return to your workspace.
Right. So I'm looking at some of the qualifications for in our family dynamics that you list, saying that we may become entangled if we do things like, and as I read through them, I say, oh, I do that with my kids. I do that with my kids. And my husband would agree. You know, in the case of my husband, he just figures our kids are going, and they're in their 20s, and you know, they live elsewhere, and he figures they're just going to be okay. Oh, but not me. I'm so preoccupied with them. And, you know, you talk about if we drop things that we need to do or places we need to be or opportunities, you know, for ourselves so that we can serve that other person, that might be a red flag.
Yes, it's something to pay attention to. It's not saying those are bad choices. It's just saying, am I doing that all of the time? You know, have I done that to the detriment of, you know, my workout program or, you know, the feedback I'm getting from my friends? We want that data to come into ourself. And it's, again, your example is so wonderful. I've been writing some articles for online magazines, and a couple of the requests have been how to set healthy boundaries with grown children, or how do we become entangled with our grown children. It's a really important question to keep paying attention to as we encourage their identity and independence.
I love it. I just have to relate this thing that happened the other day that's so simple, and yet it shows how these complexities run deep. So the big jar of artichoke hearts that you can get at Costco, we were with our kids camping, and one of them was leaving, and he said, "Hey, can I take the rest of those artichoke hearts with me? I really like those." And and my husband said, "They're gone." And I thought, "I know they're not gone." So he leaves, and I said, "What about the artichoke hearts?" And he said, "Well, I didn't want him to take them. I like the artichoke hearts." And I thought, that is hilarious, because I would have bent over backwards to get the artichoke hearts to the 25-year-old. And so, yeah.
That's right. Well, and that is great, because, you know, I was writing this morning on this article I've been asked for, and the part of the point is that we want to see those 25-year-olds as adults, or at least as emerging adults, and relate adult to adult. So, but again, Lynn, none of this is set in stone. It's set in our hearts. It's set in our spirit.
Yes.
that considers them. Maybe you would have given him the artichoke hearts if that was what was, you know, the best balance for you. But the main thing is really staying in touch with self as we are extending ourself to others.
Exactly. And obviously, there's a healthy way to look at that. And, you know, if you don't care about the artichoke hearts, of course you give them. But if you were thinking about the pizza you were going to make tomorrow with those artichoke hearts, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that it is an example in a tangible day-in, day-out mode. We are invited often during the day to make these types of decisions that are, do I take care of myself, or do I say yes to something when I really need to say no and go home? Of course, we're all home. Yeah. So do I say yes to something when I really need to turn the computer off? Let's go there today.
Yes, exactly. Well, speaking of being at home and how we're all home, you use a lot of these tenets in your book, Disentangle, and apply it to other areas of life. And one of those areas is during the time of COVID, when we are cooped up in the house with other people that we are in interpersonal relationships with, whether they're roommates or members of our family. Can you talk about some of the ways, and we all know how entangled we're becoming with these people, and how to kind of keep it healthier?
It is so interesting. This is the second edition of this book, and it's so interesting. It is coming out at this pandemic time, where we are, everything you just described about living so closely. And to cut right to the point, I'm going to bring the word control back into our conversation, Lynn. And the pandemic has raised all of our awareness of things that we are and are not in control of. And the unknowns are part of what we don't know. And so if we're not mindful in our close living situations, we may be creating entanglements by trying to control other people and more than we need to. And again, I've talked about if they're children, that's one thing. If they're teenagers, that's another. But if we are trying to control other adults, there's going to be a limit to that. And so let me give you the light that I shed on it. What we want to do is remember the things we can control, which have to do with go to bed when I need to go to bed, get the amount of sleep that I need for it to be mentally healthy. Sleep is just everything to mental health. I eat the foods that I eat, exercise, even though I'm right at home, find my ways. How do I want to spend my, you know, time, and how can I give myself little breaks, even 5-minute breaks? How can I find that solitude for myself? Maybe it's stepping out on a porch unannounced for, you know, 10 minutes. So I think always looking for what we can do that is within our control is very healing for self, and it really is good for the relationships in the house as well.
I like that. Nancy Johnson is my guest, and her book is called Disentangle: When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else. Nancy, wondering about those people who are, say, children of alcoholic parents, and then they grow up and they have their own relationships. And I know there's a lot of trickle down into the entanglement for those subsequent relationships that these, you know, children of alcoholic parents might be in. What are the caveats there? How do you know these will be relationships that they need to watch out for, you know, every single relationship in their life, that they don't go into entanglement?
Yes. I mean, again, a lot of this is about cultivating self-awareness. And so anything those children who become young, you know, teenagers and young adults, anything they can do to notice either what roles they took on in their family, alcoholic family system, and those are described by several different therapists in different ways. I like Sharon Wegscheider-Cruz's list of hero, scapegoat, lost child, and mascot. And they usually in a family system, the child will have taken on one of those roles. And the problem with the roles is that it's exactly what you're talking about, and that is, without awareness, they can rigidly attach themselves to that role and carry it into future relationships and work situations and et cetera. So the person becoming aware of the roles and the patterns that they took on in that situation, it can be an important part of helping them not follow those patterns and roles into their future.
I like that. Well, I have just a few minutes left, Nancy, and I wanted to know if we are asking the right questions of ourselves. Are we trying to control someone, or trying to control a situation in that we're trying to change someone, fix someone, or get them to love us? We know those are questions that we can ask ourselves about these relationships. But are there other questions that we can do, you know, quickly identify when we find ourselves in those situations where we're becoming entangled? We all know that, you know, don't take things personally, which is always easier said than done. But what are some of these questions we can ask ourselves and little tenets that we can take throughout our day?
So my answer for you is in the form of another visual thing I use, and that is I talk about us having four areas of self, and they are circles, and they intersect, and we want to integrate them, and they are our thoughts, our feelings, our body, and our spirit, Lynn. And if we can stop and say, what am I thinking here? What am I truly thinking? What am I truly feeling? And really lingering there. It takes a while to do that. What is my body telling me? Am I feeling tight, or am I feeling like running away? And what is my spirit talking about? And I'm not talking about any particular religious tenets. And for the sake of this question, I would simply say, what is my gut feeling telling me? I think intuition can and gut feelings can fall in that spiritual zone. So if we can remember, check in all those aspects of self, thoughts, feelings, body, and spirit, even just visiting them can help us to center ourselves.
The book, again, is Disentangle: When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else. My guest, Nancy Johnston. Nancy, thank you so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you, Lynn. It's been great speaking with you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.